What's up, guys? Welcome to the Behind the Deal podcast, where we explore growth through acquisition. Whether you're a private equity fund manager looking to expand your portfolio or a business owner aiming to scale and build lasting value through acquisition, each of our episodes will break down the strategies, stories, the lessons that make acquisition one of the most powerful paths to growth. I hope you enjoy. Today on the Behind the Deal podcast, I am joined by Scott and Josh of Oceans Equity. These guys, awesome episode. We dove into, the emotional intelligence that goes into creating deals, right? Understanding who is the owner that you're buying, what makes them tick, what's the situation and the ideal outcome that they're looking to achieve. These guys delve into how they really pay attention to that stuff before they buy a business. It's not just spreadsheets. It's not just, potential return on capital or, this market's super fragmented and we can really, take advantage of something before, it's very much focused on who's the person and the team that we're buying into. How can we get to know them? How can we align with them? And how can we, create a structure and a situation that allows that team to, get a win under their belt right now, get some chips off the table, create some liquidity for themselves, but also, going into the future, being aligned on how they're going to grow that company, putting that person in a position where they're leveraging the highest and best use of their time. A lot of these founders, may not be at all times. They're pulled into all different aspects of their business. So I really like this episode. I really like these guys. I love their approach. Take a listen. I think you'll love it. Thanks. Scott, Josh, how we doing? What's going on, guys? Thanks for joining me.
Hey, man. Happy to get together.
Same here. This has been a long time coming, but I'm glad we could finally kind of make it happen here. You guys are joining us from Miami, correct?
Yes, sir.
That's right. Coconut Grove.
I'm jealous because up here in Boston where I am, it's November. It's like 40 degrees, starting to rain. So, you guys don't have to experience any of that anymore. Well, this is great. I'm as I've kind of talked to you guys a little bit about, this podcast is mostly about M&A, the strategies, that have helped you guys become successful, maybe some pitfalls, maybe some real-time stories. So if you don't mind, we can kind of jump right into it and discuss a little bit about, Oceans and how you guys approach certain things.
Sure.
Awesome. So, Oceans Equity, you guys, it's... How long's the group been around? How long have you guys been doing this together under that name?
Well, I guess we'll dial the clock back a little bit farther. Scott and I are buddies for 25 years now. We've been friends since high school. Ran in the same circles in undergrad, and our careers have weaved in and out of each other's, over the course of the past 20 years as we've been developing professionally. Spent about 8 years together at a prior shop, working side by side in a similar strategy. And then we started up Oceans Equity in late 2023. So we're almost at the 2-year anniversary.
Got it. That's a great story. Honestly, that must be cool. So I don't know if you guys know this. I don't know if Brian's told you, but Brian and I, so we went to the same college, Babson College, played baseball there. Brian's 5 years older than me. So he finished up playing, stuck around and got his master's and was the assistant coach. And he actually recruited me out of high school to come play baseball there. So I've known Brian since I was like 16.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah. And we haven't always worked together. We started Deal Gen together coming up on 5 years now, but, we've just been friends for like half my life at this point. So it's, similar in that way, you built the foundation on friendship, and I think, it's important. Right. It's business. Being in business together is hard. But if you, have similar values and, kind of see the world through the same set of eyes in a lot of ways, then it makes it a little easier to navigate.
Yeah. We always knew that we got along really well and, we're compatible personality wise. But, having the opportunity to work together for several years in the same strategy and, share an office wall and just be constantly talking about what we were looking at, what we were working on. It was sort of the last box to check for us in terms of, do we think about opportunities the same way? Do we gravitate toward the same types of situations? And, you know, once we realized that we were really cut from the same cloth in that respect as well, it just, it made a lot of sense to partner up.
Yeah. Well, good for you. Good for you for taking the leap and, you know, going out there and doing it on your own. So talk to me a little bit about, you know, your strategy, right? You guys are doing kind of control investments, lower middle market, but when it comes to how you're looking at certain businesses, right, what are, you know, maybe some of the top like must haves in a company beyond just, you know, the typical financials of, you know, 2 to 10 million of EBITDA. What type of businesses are you looking for?
I think the intro to this conversation is the perfect one because Scott and I always say we're partnership first investors. And so at this end of the market, and we, you know, we really define this as small cap. Sure. We say 3 to 15 million of EBITDA is our strike zone. Yep. Arguably even smaller, 3 to 8. We spend a lot of energy and time underwriting, which is, you know, fancy investor speak for getting to know our future partners. And we spend a ton of time saying, is this industry executive, boots on the ground, frontline operator, someone who we can really partner with and trust to run the business while we bring a certain other set of skills to the table? So more than just what's the business, what do they do, what's the economic opportunity, what's the value, and doing all the things that we do as investors, we really say, are we backing the right business leader? Is this the right, you know, ambitious operator that we could take a business doing 3, 4, 5 million of EBITDA to 20 or 25 million?
Right, right.
And that's the first question that we really ask ourselves is who would we be partnering with?
I mean, I think I totally believe in that approach, but you know, if you don't mind, go a little deeper for me, like, cause that takes, you know, underwriting a company is just all financial IQ, right? But when you're talking about partnering with somebody and getting to know them a little bit, that's more like emotional IQ and, you know, understanding who they are as a person. So what type of strategies go into that analysis, right? It's not a spreadsheet. It's more of who are you?
The first requirement or prerequisite is we need to have access to the owner. And, you know, we gravitate toward and focus on processes or lack thereof where we can get directly connected to the business owner at the very beginning of the process. Really important to be able to spend time with them, interact with them, and start that process of evaluating the personality fit, you know, and what makes them tick. What are their priorities? Are they going to be, open and amenable to having somebody else have a say in what happens next? And will they be open to new ideas? Some folks just really struggle, you know, with having anybody to answer to other than themselves. And we are, as Josh mentioned, we're very partnership driven and focused. So we create a collaborative environment where, you know, best idea wins. And we try to complement and run alongside operators that really know the industry well and bring our areas of expertise, which are much more on the business infrastructure, the, you know, putting scalable systems in place, having the right platforms in place to be able to grow quickly, M&A capabilities, bringing strong people into the organization to augment and supplement what's already there. These are areas that are not commonly the strengths of a founder, of an entrepreneur. They tend to be stronger in their particular industry, winning new customers, focusing on service delivery. And so when we get that mix right or that chemistry right, it can be a really symbiotic relationship, but they have to be open to it the same way that we are. And so we just spend a lot of time on the front end with them, talking with them, understanding what makes them tick. How do they think about, you know, the growth opportunities for the business and what are they really looking for? And over the course of several weeks and in many cases months of getting to know them, it's a bit like dating before you get married, right? You have a much better sense of who you're getting involved with. And that comes the other direction as well. They have a much better feel for us versus say like an investment banked auction where all interactions between management and prospective buyers are highly choreographed and they're limited in nature. So you don't quite know exactly who you're working with until you actually get to the point where you're very close to closing.
Yeah.
With a larger business with a built out corporate org chart, the company tends to carry more weight than any single individual. When you're at the smaller end of the market, the individuals really matter. And so getting that right means, or getting it wrong rather, means that if you have one person who's no longer a contributor, they left the business, they retired, they went to a competitor or something, whatever it ends up being, is these businesses can fall apart pretty quickly. So
right.
Spending time on psych evaluation at this end of the market, I would venture to guess that we're allocating, you look at the pie chart of our time spent evaluating opportunities, we're probably much more weighted towards psych eval of who are we partnering with, who's the operator, what makes them tick, why are they doing this, what is the point of the transaction, how will they change once they achieve their goals. Because our job, as Scott and I think of it, at this end of the market, is to take a business which has traditionally been family owned, founder owned, entrepreneurial run, which tends to be very lean and nimble and all of these things, but they tend not to have, call it, institutional momentum or enterprise grade momentum, where they can continue to operate beyond the contributions of any individual. So our job is to say, how can we make a business become that? That is how we unlock value over time. And so, to Scott's point, making sure that we get the person right and we're doing that psych eval and we're knowing what makes them tick is the starting point on this journey of taking a family owner or relatively immature business and making it enterprise grade, something that will fetch a market leading multiple, something that will be 3 or 4 or 5 times the size as it is today, offering more services to more customers and more geographies. You know, those are the things that we're trying to see if we have a path towards achieving or at least traveling down.
Yeah. No, I mean, you guys bring up a lot of really good points, especially with the auction stuff. You know, it is a pretty crazy process, and coming from, I mean, our company at DealGem, we do a lot of origination for buyers. But at the same time, we do run some sell side deals ourselves, and we're on that end of the table. It is pretty funny to think about, like, you know, when the companies are in those processes, they get a little bit of annoyed with the buyer asking questions about their business. And it's like, these guys are about to buy you and write like a $30 million check. You know, like it's okay for them to try to get a little bit of an understanding about who you are and dive a little bit deeper into the company. And it's almost like, you know, in a lot of ways, these bankers set these expectations sometimes where, you know, it's like selling a house, right? Like, you know, there's a little bit of emotion involved, but at the same time, this person just gets the keys and now it's theirs. And like, this is a little bit of a different story, right? Like we're buying a living, breathing organism of a business with people that are already there and, you know, a track record and a history. And, you know, especially at businesses where, you know, they're serving consumers, like we have to understand, you know, how much they value customer service, and all that stuff just gets factored into the whole decision, you know, and it's so important. And so making sure that you're aligned there, I can see, you know, why you guys spend so much time on that. And then I guess, you know, once you found that owner, that operator who you think meets that criteria, how do you structure the deal, you know, from a financial standpoint, so that everyone's aligned into the future? You know, what are you guys looking to usually do with those operators to say, like, hey, our goal is to grow this. We align on everything and the strategy and the collaboration, stuff like that. But now we want everybody to be incentivized, not only from a, you know, emotional, like, hey, rah-rah standpoint, but like also what's in it for them?
Yeah. I mean, we start out from the very beginning, oftentimes on the very first phone call with a business owner, talking about and trying to distinguish ourselves from sponsors that may be more focused on the check size and how much of their capital that they can put to work in a deal versus creating as much equity alignment as we possibly can between us and the entrepreneur that we're partnering with. And so, you know, we'll talk to them about being open to 60-40 transactions, potentially 51-49, if they want to own more of the business and they are bullish on the upside that we can create together. If that means we're writing a smaller check, we're completely fine with that. We're big believers in having economic alignment with our partners. We think that that solves for a lot in terms of keeping everybody rowing in the same direction and focused on the prize. And so we start out early on in those discussions talking about it as a two-step process, you know, taking chips off the table in the first transaction, monetizing the value that they've already created is a really important part of it, right? We have to get that right. They need to feel like they've de-risked it for themselves and created a nest egg so that they no longer have everything in the basket in the business. But at the same time, we spend a lot of time talking about what does that next exit look like? If we're successful in achieving the goals that we have laid out, taking a business from 3 or 4 million of EBITDA to north of 15 or north of 20, and alleviating the key person risk that exists in all of these businesses, you know, in some way or another, with one or two entrepreneurs just wearing all the hats. And we bring in, you know, leadership that can carry the torch forward and go with the next owner of the business so that the founder has the ability or the optionality to walk away and retire if they choose to do that in that next exit. And then economically, what does that look like, right? We're always striving to create a lot of multiple expansion by growing these businesses, creating more sophisticated systems that they run on, augmenting leadership with experienced professionals and executives who have been in the industry before, have worked with private equity before. If we check those boxes, the value upside for them and their in the portion of the business that they retain, whether that's 25%, 35%, or somewhere in between, it's really meaningful and can be substantially larger than what they would get if they sold all of the business in the first transaction when they're, you know, sort of mid single digits EBITDA. And so again, it does sort of become a bit of a self-selecting population, right? There are certain business owners who say, I'd rather just cash out. You know, I've put blood, sweat, and tears into this business and I'm ready to walk away and let somebody else grab the steering wheel here. We look for the ones who say, I'm excited. I think there's a lot more we can do here. And with the right partner in this with me, we can take it to its full potential, which I do believe is 15, 20 million plus of EBITDA. And I know how much value that will get created. If we do that, I want to be a part of that. I want to own, you know, a substantial piece of this business alongside of you. And when we see them leaning in like that, that's when we lean in as well. And it feels like there's a good fit.
Joe, you said something. I want to like flip it on its head just to help you and the audience gain a little bit of fresh perspective. You know, when you're selling a business and you have a business owner just like getting fatigued from all the questions and everyone poking and digging at the business, and it feels like you're being audited. And you are being audited, right?
Yeah, you are.
In multiple you know, subject matters. Think about the analysis if you were selling 100% of your business and the next step for you is, you know, your vacation house in Costa Rica, or if you were selling 60 or 65%, but you're intending to stay in the seat, you're bringing on a partner, and you have mentally subscribed to this idea that the portion of the business I didn't sell could be worth substantially more than the majority position that I did sell.
Right.
It is a two-way street. It is a great equalizer in due diligence. Now it is not just about us learning about the seller's business. It's the seller also saying, who am I partnering with?
Exactly.
Are these guys going to help my business or hurt my business? Are they going to help me achieve my financial goals on the portion of the business that I don't sell? And so what we find is it's a great balancing tool in terms of flow of information and discovery. And it sets the stage for a collaborative partnership when you do close. In the 100% transaction, boy, you guys could really beat each other up in the documentation and the negotiation phase, because at the very end, it's over. You severed all ties.
Exactly.
The day after our transaction closes with our prospective partner, that's the first day of married life.
Yeah, yeah.
And so if we've beaten each other up, that's just a terrible way to start. So it ends up creating a much healthier, in my opinion, transaction dynamic when you're looking at these partnership deals and you're both assessing one another for that partnership fit.
Well, I've seen it on both ends. Honestly, it's, you know, we've sold companies where it was 100% and that owner was, you know, solely focused on just the close, get the deal closed, get me my check, I'm done, you know, type of stuff. And, you know, that's a different level of, I guess, stress. And at the same time, you know, because their motivation is just to close, a lot of time as it gets closer, you know, I think it's tough because it kind of puts them in a tough position. You know, once that, like, that desperation starts to come out a little bit, and like now usually the buyer holds all the cards because they're the one that has the keys to the castle, which is like retirement or, you know, sailing off into the sunset. So the buyer's usually able to, you know, win a lot of those arguments on like, hey, this is how we're going to do it, this is what we're going to do. And slowly the seller starts to cave, and it's our job to not let them and protect them from those things. But on the flip side, you know, one of the more recent deals we've done on the sell side has been much more of a collaborative thing, where it was like a 60-40 equity split. These guys were very much aligned in how the company was going to grow. The seller was getting rid of, you know, basically it was like a big recap, right? So they had all these family members who hadn't been involved in the business for like years and years and years that were just sitting on the cap table, you know, not doing anything, not bringing anything to the table. This buyer came in and was going to replace that capital, replace that equity, add a little bit more capital and help them grow. And we just kept telling the seller like, hey, look, you know, these are the types of questions to ask when you guys are in person. These are what you want to learn about these people. But at the same time, whenever they'd get a little unsure about it, you know, would remind them like, hey, right now you just have dead weight sitting there. Like, and you guys can keep the business and keep making the same money you're doing right now. Like, it's fine doing what it's doing right now. But if you have these aspirations to grow and you want to go beyond and you see, you know, all these green pastures ahead of you, you guys are going to get a partner that's going to help you get to those, you know, get to that outcome. And it's not just money. It's ideas, it's people, it's resources. It's, you know, this is a 50-year-old family business. So it's like fresh, you know, ideas on how, again, like you guys mentioned, like how to, you know, just tie the business together in a different way than they'd been doing it for the last, you know, 3 decades.
Yeah. And also shift mentality from, every dollar that I invest in the future growth of this business is a dollar I'm taking out of my own pocket, to wanting to reinvest every dollar of cash flow and every dollar of profit back into what will be the highest ROI, highest return on capital that we can create to maximize that second transaction at the end of the road. That can be a powerful psychology shift as well, because a lot of business owners, they hold off or they hesitate, especially if they have a partner or partners on the cap table who really aren't that interested in investing in growth and pushing the pedal down, and there's misalignment there. You end up passing on really attractive growth opportunities to take the business to the next level, because of, you know, you're sort of thinking about it as a piggy bank, and you're thinking about the bottom line as your own personal bottom line.
Yep.
And so that can be a shift as well. And we often find situations where there are partners in a business and, you know, one wants to grow and is really bullish, and the other wants to sort of pump the brakes and slow down and start to cash out. That can be a natural entry point for us as well as a capital partner.
So there's a company in our portfolio right now that was the origin story, right? Two partners, one wanted to grow, the other wanted to take his foot off the gas. At the same time, even the ambition of the partner that we ultimately backed, we made a couple of small acquisitions for them, and we've grown the business about 65% or so since we acquired it. And it's only been 10 months. So we've grown it substantially. At the same time, the ambitious leader who we're really fond of and is an impressive operator, at the same time is telling us, he's like, gosh, I don't know if I would have been able to deal with the stress of growing these markets and deploying this capital and being naked on, you know, millions of dollars of working capital and deployment costs to launch organic growth the way that we have. And so even though he's having fun, he's growing, he owns 25% of the business, it's a little bit of a little bit less stressful for him, because, you know, he doesn't have to worry personally about all the cash that he's got to leave locked up in the business. We've made commitment to back the business in those growth endeavors. So for him personally, he is having his cake and eating it too. He was able to sell a big chunk. At the same time, he's having fun growing it. He's definitely, you know, punching the gas pedal, and the business has accelerated its growth curve. So we do think that this style of investing at this end of the market could work really well in terms of allowing founders or entrepreneurs or families, allowing them to have their cake and eat it too. Like, you really can have it all.
You know,
and two-step the process towards wealth creation.
Right. Yeah. I mean, because that first bite of the apple is always very meaningful to these people, you know. And then at the same time, if you got a good 2-3-5 year plan laid out, even 7 sometimes, where, you know, they just took a nice chunk of capital, probably one of the bigger days they've ever had in their career, put it in their bank account, and now they're super aligned, you know, on what it's going to take to grow this thing and get another one just like that, if not bigger, most of the time bigger, hopefully. I could see how that would just add so much fuel to the fire of someone, you know, especially someone who's an entrepreneur, like a born operator, born entrepreneur, maybe got stuck in a little bit of a rut there for a little while because, again, you know, they, for personal reasons or whatever, you know, they're like, hey, I got to start pulling money out of this business at some point. But now they have everything they need to take it to where they think they could go. And usually at this point, they have 10, 15, 30 plus years experience under their belt as to, they know how these businesses operate. They know the network of people, you know, within their own circle that they could go out and probably acquire pretty soon too, you know? So now they can actually go act on all those things that they've dreamed about for a long time.
Yeah, the irony is the rut that you mentioned is typically a product of their success.
Right.
It's like the business has grown. Usually the entrepreneur, right, or the business leader is wearing too many hats, and they're bottlenecked or doing too much administration. And so it's like, how do you now build the skeleton to hold all the muscle mass that you've built? You know, like, how do you get those things working together?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they end up getting pulled into everything, right? Insurance, right. HR, tax, accounting, all the things that really are not the best use of their time.
Yes.
It's not what adds value to the business on a go-forward basis, but it's administratively necessary to keep the trains running on time. And they're often the only person who can actually handle it until we come and get involved. And so our goal is to you know, look at all those hats that they're wearing that aren't really aligned with their skill set or how they want to be spending their time, help them take off some of those hats and get people in who really do specialize in those areas. And we found that often, you know, an entrepreneur might say coming into the process, hey, I've only got like 3-4 more years left in the tank here. Mm-hmm. Once we get all that other crap off their plate and they can get back to what got them interested in the business in the first place and energizes them, which is usually sales, business development, where are we going next? What are our growth opportunities? It actually puts a lot of wind in their sails and creates more runway because they're having fun again. And that selfishly as investors, that's a win for us too, because that's the highest and best use of their time. And those are the things that are not easy to have somebody else come in and do. And that we can't easily replicate. So the more of their time we can give them back to do those things, the better it is for everybody.
100%. Do you guys mind if we talk a little bit about a real example, you know, of something, you know, that you guys, I know we talked a little bit offline about you guys making an investment in my neck of the woods. But if you're okay with it, you know, sharing a little bit about how that, you know, was originated, like where that opportunity came from, how you're able to get aligned and, you know, ultimately set up this situation, I guess, you know, that we've been talking about the whole episode where, you know, there's a good outlook on how to grow this thing and how to move forward.
Sure. I'm going to start, Scott.
Sure. Go for it.
So we recently acquired a chain of family entertainment centers in New England called Ryan Family Amusements. It's a 70-year-old business. It was founded by Jim Ryan Family. Over the past 15 years, it had been operated by an executive that was trained by Jim Ryan, and ultimately he was seeking retirement. Jim Ryan had, and Ryan Family contributors had given up control about 15 years ago. And so this transaction was a catalyst to cleaning up the cap table, just like you mentioned, and we have a retiring executive, yet you still have 5 of the other senior most management team members who wanted to continue to run the company, and they were all shareholders. So you know, they ultimately retain, call it 50% of their stake in what was at the end of the day, a 75-25 transaction. And we partnered with the management team to clean up the cap table and execute on a growth plan to consolidate the New England market with, you know, bowling centers and arcade centers. That's primarily what Ryan's does. It's arcade, it's bowling, food and beverage, great place to have a birthday party for kids. There's also a very big league community in New England. So a lot of league bowlers, there's traditional 10 pin bowling, there's candle pin bowling. And what we had found is that there's just a large underappreciation for the stickiness of bowling centers. It's a very sticky, hobby driven, less discretionary type of consumer demand that we've seen in other types of establishment. And as you know, in New England specifically, there's lots of fragmentation. And so with the management team in place and ambitious for growth, we said we could back you to go consolidate some of the fragmentation and give you fresh capital to unlock some of the opportunities to expand within your existing footprint. And awesome. And so it was a natural partnership.
That's great. That's great. And yeah, I mean, being from up here, you know, I've even in my, you know, early 20s was in a bowling league. They are popular. You know, people, it gets cold around here. There's not much to do, you know, from late November to, you know, honestly, early April. So
amongst bowlers in the bowling community, they say don't ever gamble against a bowler if they grew up in New England. So apparently there's not much to do when it's peak winter.
No. And these things are like sold out leagues. So, I mean, I can see how, you know, and typically I'm sure you guys got to know this person, like you mentioned, and I'm sure in those discussions, you know, learned a little bit about like, hey, I've known the owner of so-and-so establishment for, you know, 20 years. I've known the owner of this one for 15 years. I know that, you know, they don't have, like, their kids aren't interested in taking it over or whatever. They like are aware of these situations.
The future owner of this company really mattered to the selling shareholder group. They care about their existing employees. They care about the brand of the company. They really do love what they do. It is a wonderful group of people. The management team are some of the kindest folks that we've worked with, and we're real excited about the partnership. The reason, or the way we got connected to them, was from an industry executive that we had a connection to through a mutual friend who he's also in our arcade management business. So, you know, more indoor entertainment. He at one point in time trained the retiring president of Ryan's. And wow. So it's this small world, you know, network effect of getting connected by executives. And it just creates a level of trust in this transition, because like the 100% fail that we were talking about before, you might care a little less, right? The end goal is really what you're after there. Here it was about legacy preservation and culture continuity and bringing, you know, more of these experiences to more customers. That's really something that the existing management team and the retiring management team wanted to preserve.
That's great. Awesome. I mean, great partnership, you know, definitely a fragmented area, not an area that not an area that personally I see a lot of people asking us to go find things in that area. So, you know, but usually that's where there's good opportunity, right? It hasn't been.
There's these leagues get sold out. Scott and I were on site doing diligence, and it was 10:30 a.m. on a Tuesday morning. And we walk inside the bowling center, and it's just the sound of bowling balls, pins clanking. And you're thinking to yourself, you're like, wow, I mean, my gosh, this is not a peak period. And sure enough, there was a senior league, full swing. Every lane was occupied, and those folks are in there spending money, and they're eating and drinking. And I even saw, you know, some folks from the league who were playing in the arcade, you know, at the claw machines trying to win prizes. And
that's great.
So, you know, there's an underappreciation for how sticky the environment is. On this one, interesting and good example of how we can help you know, unlock potential and back management, we made an acquisition, an add-on acquisition before we even closed the platform.
Oh, wow.
The management and through their network came to us with an opportunity. They said, we really like this location. We'd like to buy it. And we said, okay, go ahead and buy it. You know, we'll stand over your shoulder, help you execute the transaction. And then when we close a platform investment, we'll reimburse you. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what we did. And then we have another one. We've signed a purchase agreement on to make another acquisition on two more centers. So
awesome.
They're already, and right, we're in the first inning. So they're already seeing, you know, the consolidation unfold, and the whole group is really energized.
Yeah, the value.
It's a business that's been in the market for six decades plus at this point. So, you know, just has a reputation and a presence in the community that you can't replicate or create, you know, as an investor. It has to already be there. And from, you know, an M&A perspective, thinking about the ways that we could add to this platform and bring, you know, proprietary opportunities to the table that are accretive, that will help expand its footprint or increase the density of its footprint within the markets that it's in. Tapping into their network, their reputation in New England, and the people that they know, and just sort of the brand equity and reputation for quality that they've established, it really greases the skids in terms of finding independent business owners out there that are willing to transact. Whereas if you approach them just as an investor who is sort of new on the scene, it'd be much tougher.
Definitely.
And with our execution capabilities combined with their knowledge of the market and the people who are in the market, who are out there, and who fits with the platform, we think it'll be a really powerful combination. We've already, you know, hit the ground running, and I think there's a lot more work to do there on the M&A side.
Good for you guys. I mean, the story is awesome. And honestly, I mean, I really appreciate, you know, you guys coming on here and sharing your time, sharing, you know, your theory. I think a lot of people, you know, who might listen to this show and are business owners who are thinking about, you know, how do I've always wanted to make acquisitions. I've always thought growing my company that way has been, you know, a great idea, but I've never really been able to execute. Hearing how, you know, you guys look at partners, hearing, you know, how groups like yours, you know, think, right? It's not just about spreadsheets. It's not just about crunching numbers or, you know, maximizing return by, you know, slimming down costs or anything like that. It's about aligning and leveraging expertise in all different areas of the business to make sure that, you know, you can move forward and achieve something really special together. And I think you guys did a great job here, you know, articulating how you do that. And I appreciate the real world story too. Everyone likes a good story. So congrats on the success, guys. And honestly, I mean, thanks again for coming on here and joining the show and being willing to share that.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Joe. It was great.
Absolutely. Well, if anybody has an opportunity out there they want to send you, where can they find you guys? Where should they go?
Sure. Our website is oceans-equity.com. There's a contact box on the website, or you could do Josh or Scott at oceans-equity.com, and you can just email us directly.
Beautiful. Well, thank you both again. I appreciate it. And I'm looking forward to, you know, staying in touch here and hopefully finding you guys the next opportunity at some point too.
Awesome.
Thanks, Joe.
Thanks, fellas.
Thank you.